On this week's Rain on Your Parade, we talk about death and why the movie Coco might be the best ever. Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan, here, as always, with producer Mike.
Hi, everybody. Hi, J.L. How you doing?
I'm great. You know what? There comes a time. Let me tell you a quick little story.
Mike, please.
You always appreciate stories about angry matriarchs.
You tell a quick story?
Relatively. It's all relative. You know, when Terrence Malick makes a quick movie, it's still going to be 2.5 hours of sheer boredom.
Yeah, hard. But, I was going to say 2.5 hours is awful.
And I've lost all the Slickback Studio young folk with the Terrence Malick reference. Hey, is he on TikTok? My mom, for a good 25 years, would complain to my dad that he wouldn't make the bed. My mom was the breadwinner for a lot of my life, and my dad was much older. And he believed, my dad believed, you know, making the bed was woman's work. Mm. And he's an old-fashioned guy, born in 1931, Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
A different time, certainly.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where I just, after a while, I almost sided with my dad, where it was like, Mom, it's over. He's not making it. It's just you. It's 20 years of you cursing that he doesn't make the bed.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to just count your losses. Oddly enough, 20 years, you know, how long I've been doing comedy. But weirdly enough, I don't see the parallel here. It's time to quit, cut your losses and just move on. Focus on other things. Don't waste the energy.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about you being just incredibly rude at the top of every episode.
Not rude, indignant.
Disrespectful is what it is. Okay. Well, now that we've got that housekeeping, you know, I try to keep that, you know, try to keep that behind closed doors, you know, that's the, but sometimes we air the dirty laundry.
Here. It spills over every now and then.
I'm sorry. But guys, I have a little bit of an apology. And first, I want to make sure people are aware that I'm going to be in Las Vegas. I have a couple shows coming up in New York City, the 13th and the 14th. I'll be in Las Vegas on the 23rd of March. And then there's a little bit of a gap. We call that day job work.
Mm.
Okay, that's a very exclusive gig that I've booked. I've booked a residency with a law firm for a couple of months, okay? That's how we're going to refer to it now. That we're going to really use all the buzzy language. So I've got a 2 to 3 month residency with a very prestigious firm. I can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm in D.C. in June and St. Paul, Minnesota in September. And I'm trying to obviously fill in a bunch of gigs up until then. But go to jlcomedy.com. Check that out. Check out my new special, please. And join the Patreon if you like this show, want to support it, or want to get a lot of other bonus material. So, jlcomedy.com, go there. Goodbye. I have a mea culpa for our audience, and it's only 1 week. It's been only 1 week. Usually these things take a lot of time before I'm proven wrong on something. But I recommended the show Not Dead Yet last week with the lovely Gina Rodriguez and the current reigning goat of tall comic actors, Brad Garrett. And then I watched the episode that night. And
These are new episodes.
These are new episodes. Right now. Season 2 is airing right now.
Oh.
I loved season 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not pretending that it's Arrested Development or Seinfeld or All in the Family, but it's just a pleasant, little bit different, but a very pleasant sort of watch. This season, they've sort of changed the format. And it's only, we're only 3, maybe 4 episodes in, but now it's a pattern. They've changed the format. It's cheesier. They're emphasizing like a side character who was great in a side character role in season 1. Now they're trying to kind of push him into like the everyday characters. And it's now too much and it's diminishing the character. So season 1, I'm sure, is on Hulu. I would stand by that. But I can't vouch for, you know, just like Shep Proudfoot couldn't vouch for the other guy in Fargo. He could only vouch for Steve Buscemi, but not the psycho who put people in a wood chipper. That's how I feel about season 2 of Not Dead Yet. So I need, you know, integrity is very important to me and no one else in comedy. Mm-hmm. So I thought I needed to share that in case I got a couple of comments. And we had great, great comments and a lot of interaction. People have listened on the last episode as of this recording, the SNL episode.
Right.
A lot of feedback. That's great. Appreciate it. Whether they're questions, comments, or compliments, that's really good.
The episode where we declared SNL dead and the audience, you know, I saw a comment in there about how much I hate comedians, which I found funny.
Yeah. Well, I'm willing to go into the lion's den for comedy and for my fan mm-hmm. or fans. I hear it might be plural by now. But I, and another thing, just based on a couple of recent episodes, SNL, mm-hmm. Which is already a couple, you know, what I liked about the Shane Gillis episode. And as of this recording, the next episode is Sydney Sweeney. So SNL, you bought yourself, you know, a reprieve. A stay of execution in a big way.
Yeah. There's okay? one blip of life on that sonogram.
Yes. She's the busty, hot, smoking, smoky-eyed Susan Sarandon from Dead Man Walking right now. Like Sean Penn is SNL just sitting there denying that he murdered comedy. And in comes sexy Sydney Sweeney in a habit. Just trying to say, you have to confess. You mm-hmm. won't feel freedom unless you have to admit you ruined comedy. And, you know, hopefully SNL is like, would you wear a bikini in this sketch? I might get closer to saying I ruined comedy if I could see that. And she might. She might. But the Shane Gillis episode, which everybody's talking about, what I loved about it is it was such a contradiction from what I said. I stand by what I said. But the great thing about it is whether you liked the episode or not, it did not feel like they took the week off. Mm-hmm. It did not feel cut and paste. It did not feel like they were just like, let's mail it in. Let's get a couple game shows. Let's get Kenan Thompson smiling at everything. Let's get a there was no We Might Destroy sketch. I mean, hell yeah. No, I'm not kidding. Fuck yeah. That it was like, whether you thought it was, here's what I liked about the episode. It felt like they took hacks. They took strong, like, I want to hit a 3-run homer here. Mm-hmm. They did that for like 5 or 6 sketches.
Yeah.
And I respect that. That's what SNL is not there to get bunt singles every week.
I know. No, I guess.
And it was an episode, whether you liked it or not, I felt like they were swinging. They were the sketches were original. It did not feel like any other episode this year of SNL. So hats on, but a slight tip of the cap. I'm keeping my hat on.
We both have them on today. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not getting a full hats off.
Yeah.
You don't get one good episode and all of a sudden I capitulate. But it almost feels like based on that and Sydney Sweeney, I think they listened to the show. I think we're changing Maybe. Culture. I think we're changing comedy culture. I know you hate that, Mike. I know the last
No, trust me. I would love if comedy culture changed. That's actually what I've been waiting for. But
yeah. Well, it starts here. Okay.
I hope you're right.
Be the misery you want to be in the world. That's my motto. Be the misery you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'll give you one other SNL tidbit. It involves Pete Davidson. Mm. When I was doing the dead name of this podcast is Righteous Prick, and mm-hmm. please don't refer to it as that, okay? Mm-hmm. Do not dead name this podcast.
Yeah.
But I did a thing years ago when Trump came into office, and I was doing a Rex Tillerson impression. He was Trump's first Secretary of State. Big
Texas guy?
Big Texan, yeah. Big noggin, like he had an Arvita Sabonis size head.
Yeah.
And I had a pretty good Rex Tillerson. Pull.
Yeah. I knew the name and I was like, huh? What?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that guy. Yeah.
You hate comedians and oil executives, according to our fans.
Well, that, yeah.
So I had a pretty good Rex Tillerson impression. And as you can imagine, it didn't do much for me.
Right, yeah.
But I was doing it on the podcast and I made a joke, and my podcast came out on Tuesdays. I made a joke and I said, you know, but I guess what? They're going to have, you know, I can't be on SNL, but I'm sure they'll have Pete Davidson's first impression ever be a strong Rex Tillerson this week, right? You know, the most. In that episode 5 days later of SNL, Pete Davidson was doing one of his desk set pieces with Colin Jost or whoever was on the Weekend Update. And he said, this is almost a quote. He goes, yeah, and my doctor thinks I do a great impression of Rex Tillerson. You tell me that somebody there wasn't fucking listening to my podcast. I'm at like,
I don't, maybe,
but don't you think that's fucking weird?
Yeah, I get. Yeah.
Like not that, that is such a, what are the odds that Pete Davidson, not exactly Jon Stewart from The Daily Show coming on to do a guest set and Weekend Update, mm-hmm. drops a, my doctor says I do a real good impression of Rex Tillerson.
Well, who's writing at that time? Are there smart guys writing? We know Pete didn't write that.
Well, but the question I have is not whether they're smart, but whether they were listeners of the Righteous Book podcast. And I will say one other thing before we move on, because this today's topic is a fun one. I think you'll agree. It's death. Yeah, we're going to be talking about death.
Yeah.
Mainly its place in the culture and how death is changing. But I mean, it's still the same. Don't get me wrong. It's still the same, but how we treat it, the living. But a friend of mine years ago, when I was just trying to get the Trump impression percolating, he had a friend who wrote at Seth Meyers.
Okay.
And he told him, oh, like he wanted to get me a writing job. He was hoping to get me like seen. And he said, oh, my boy has a podcast as Trump. And it's like, it's so good. You should listen to it. And every like few months for a couple of years, that same friend would write to me when he would watch Seth Meyers. And then he'd be like, I think someone there is listening to your show because they're starting to use like catchphrases that you've been doing for months on the podcast. Now, they weren't the most obvious catch. They weren't like the most unique catchphrases, but it was like more than one were showing up on the show. And, you know, I'm just curious who that might be, because I think this could really go from a comedy show to a Taken sequel if I ever found out who was doing that. Because wouldn't that person have an emotive to bury my comedy career? Let alone I take ownership of all my catchphrases and talent and take this game over, put it in a chokehold, as 50 Cent said. So I'm not sure I have anything else to contribute or talk about before we get to the main topic.
I think it's a perfect time to take a break.
So let's take a break. And when we're back, everybody, after a couple fun ads, death. And we're back, everybody. Mike, how was that break?
A bit depressing, I think.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a perfect lead-in to the topic.
It is. It is. I mean, we talked about not dead yet
in
the intro, and now I feel like it's a perfect time to talk about death.
Yeah.
Death is my mom just turned 80, and she's a very resilient, tough woman, but you can't help but like start to, you know, my dad passed away at 85. My mom is the oldest living member of her family, like in terms of like her immediate family. Nobody ever even lived till 80. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see somebody, you know, their mortality. And I remember my uncle saying to me at my dad's funeral 7 years ago, like my dad's yesterday was the 7 year anniversary of my dad's death. So, you know, it's a lot of death around me. And, I remember my uncle saying to me, and I think my uncle knew that he already had some issues, but didn't say anything. He would pass away 3 years later. But he just said to me after the funeral, he was just talking, and he said, yeah, you and your brother gave really nice eulogies. And, you know, what's weird is that your mom is the only person who's known my entire life. Like, in other words, his older sister, she's seen. And then when my uncle passed away, it was like my mom witnessed his entire life from start to finish. And that's very profound. Like when you get to a personal level, when it's your family and whatnot, it's a profound thing to think about. Mm-hmm. Whether you believe in an afterlife or just what this life is.
Yeah.
And I remember my college girlfriend who was a pre-med and she's now a doctor in Minnesota. When I have my shows in Minnesota, I'm like, and she's half Asian. And I was like, are we going to do a past lives thing here or what? but and we're not. The answer is we're not.
I figured that.
But she had said to me when I was starting comedy, and this is for all the bluster and the bullshit, this is when I often think like the wisdom of women is not current women, not this dumb crop of chicks we have coming up who think empowerment is like, you know, a dick sucking contest. If I can, I know.
Agree to disagree.
Yeah, I know.
Sex positive over here.
Yeah, no, I know. So is Magic Johnson. She said to me, though, she was very much, you know, being pre-med and then like being in medical school, you're seeing like I'm drinking, like I'm depressed and fucking up law school and drinking. And she's like looking at dead bodies and like,
yeah,
thinking about, and we were just that accelerated our drift apart, I think, because she was always more mature than me. But like medical school versus law school was like I joined an ugly fraternity and she was in a morgue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally, so it was totally. Like, oh, geez. But she had said to me, I was already very ambitious. I already had a feeling like comedy. I had a little bit of an aptitude for it. And it was like really fun because it was the drug that got me out of my depression in law school, really. So I had a dependency on it a little bit. So when like a show would go good, or if I did got booked on something, I was like, whoa.
Right.
And I remember her saying to me, she said this to me, and she was just like, I still remember it. She was just like, but when it's all said and done, all that matters is the people close to you and your family. And she said, even somebody like Bill Clinton, she was like, even somebody like Bill Clinton, even if his name carries on for a few hundred years, eventually it won't matter. Mm-hmm. But what will matter is the people in your life and how you treated them and how they treated you and how you shared that experience. And that was when I was like, oh, she definitely wants me to propose to her. Not happening. But she did. And we didn't. And then she married a guy from medical school. The point is, mm-hmm. not for me to relive a tragic past comedy life. Of romance.
Yes.
But is that was like one of the first conversations I'd ever had with somebody I cared about death. And she had a perfect perspective on it. Because as you now you get older and you're just like, yeah, that is kind of all that matters. Now, if I were headlining MSG tomorrow night, I'd probably be like, a few other things matter besides family.
Yeah.
Like these hot chicks backstage and my millions of fucking dollars. But when you're struggling, you can really appreciate how important the people around you are.
Yeah. But I think that that's also part of the fun thing about success is that we had a party for Slickback Studios opening, and obviously you were out of town, but you would have been there otherwise. And, I was expecting sort of this big thing because I had invited a lot of people, and the people that showed up were like the people that are involved here and a handful of other friends and my family, like my parents and my sisters and stuff.
Oh, they were there?
Yeah, they showed up.
Oh, now I'm really mad because you said it already. I obviously would have been there. I was asking you months before. Like, no, is there going to be a kickoff thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, there is. Will you be here? And I'm like, of course not.
Yeah, right. The 1 week you're on tour.
But I'm booked 3 weeks a year.
But, that's a small thing. It's not playing the garden, but it's sort of like a kickoff to what could potentially be something that's successful. And the people that were around me that I was enjoying it with were the people that were like primarily most of the people that I'm closest to and are closest to this thing. And that was there was something that was very bittersweet about that, where you're just kind of like not even bittersweet, just like sweet about the fact that the people that are there are the people that care.
Right.
Like, no, there was no bullshit there. There were no strap hangers. So that would be a payoff to having a level of success like that, where it's like if you could enjoy it with the people that you came up with or the people that were there and saw you struggle, I would imagine that also kind of makes it worth it, you know?
Yeah. And I think my come up during 2020 and 2021, which was the where, I mean, people from high school, somebody who had, tried to fuck an ex of mine wrote to me, not knowing that I knew, mm-hmm. and was like, oh, shit, this is amazing. I'm like, yeah, delete. Because the one good thing is that I do have that, Kobe Jordan kind of mentality.
Is it a good thing?
No, it's good for me in that I'm cautious about letting people I wouldn't let people celebrate with me. But mm-hmm. but what I did learn was I did attract a lot of people who I projected my own sense of integrity on and was like, oh man, because I think I've said this before on the show. It's fun to celebrate a success.
Yeah.
You want people to want to celebrate with you. So you sort of go, oh, yeah. Oh, cool. But you don't what I realized the hard way was kind of, oh, a lot of these people are just reaching out to me because they're hoping, like, can we do a video? Can we do this?
Yeah, right.
And I never do that to anybody. And I know that maybe makes me a little weird or different in this business, but I'm like, I don't want somebody to think of me that way. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't. So if a friend has a major success, I will just say, holy shit, amazing, great. And I will, even if I thought I had the perfect idea to work, I'd be like, I can't because I don't want.
But you can balance both those things, JL. Like, you can be the person that also there are gestures that you can do beyond.
Of course.
You know,
but I err on the side of looking like of not being a fucking. But yeah, I learned during that stretch, like. how good it feels to feel like people care. And then I learned, oh, they didn't really care. Mm-hmm. Because you project like I'm really good at this and I've worked really hard. Hey, look at this. Thanks for I'm glad you're in on the party. And then it just it you know, then you realize, oh, they don't care. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough lesson. But I know that if I ever blow up again, I've learned that lesson. And oh boy, they can say I've changed all they want the next go around, if there is a next go around, but it's just going to be, I'm wiser.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But as far as death, I think in terms of like, I turned 45 in 2 months, and I'm a large person, and I don't know the pandemic. My father passed away at 85, and that felt, I hate to say it, natural. You know, he was debilitating. He went in his sleep. It's a pretty good way. Mm-hmm. I not to read too much into it, but I remember I visited him. He was already sort of out, not in a coma, but just sort of barely.
Yeah, like glazed over.
But I visited him, and then my brother, without me knowing, visited him later that night. And then the next morning I got the call that he'd passed away. And in my mind, I'm like, you wonder if like somebody feels that presence, because the same thing happened with my uncle in 2020, where it was mm-hmm. like, he was out of it. He was already in an induced coma because he was having like renal failure and all that. And we all visited him and we made the decision, the very difficult decision we had to, you know, that there was no hope for recovery. Mm-hmm. And before we could even like do that, like the next morning he like went, and it was like, you feel this kind of like, wow, you wonder if out there there's this like connection still where it's like, okay, I have closure. Like my spirit has closure or whatever. But I want to make this funny is the point. So that's enough.
Good luck.
Maudlin shit. But the pandemic just made me, I don't know if it was the time in my life or my uncle was the first person who felt, you know, I had an uncle die in Haiti during the earthquake in 2010.
Oh.
And he was younger than my dad. And so that was that we thought it was my dad's oldest brother who had passed away, but it was his youngest brother. And there was something very tragic about that, of course, but it was also 300,000 people died.
Right.
So it was this, which is still just a fucking insane, like just saying that, that's mm-hmm. insane. A country of 9 million lost like 3 or 4% of its population.
Yeah.
But it was part of a bigger tragedy. Whereas my uncle, leukemia, it was like a very individualized, like, oh, this is before his time. Mm-hmm. 71. So just even though that's not young, it's not, you know, old-ish in the general sense. But that and the pandemic just got me thinking about mortality. And now it's like on my mind a lot more. And I wish it wasn't. But I wake up each day. Like I go to bed half the time just going, hope I wake up, because
really?
Laura's going to have a tough time moving me.
I'm so sorry. I mean, I know. That's really funny, though.
A 5'2 woman weeping, trying to drag a 300-pound piece of shit.
Yeah. Do you really think that, though? You go to bed sometimes?
Sometimes. Yeah? Like, I don't do the, may the Lord pay me my soul to keep. I'm just like, I'm more the Enter Sandman. God, may the Lord my soul to keep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm just like, I don't know. And I never thought of that. Mm-hmm. Like, the first time I would say, here's another, and then we'll get to, like, the broader death in society. The funny parts, guys. The funny parts.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to talk about death. it was the same time. It was like my college girlfriend was my first girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I was like, from freshman year, we lifeguarded together as our student job. And I was like blown away. Like, she was just fucking beautiful. Mm-hmm. I was just like, you know, it wasn't just like, hey, I kind of like her. It was like, I think I found my dream. Like, I think I found my dream girl lifeguarding. Like, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And, courted her for 2 years. I remember we like hooked up and she was like, nothing's happening. And you got to understand me. I'm like, yeah, we're not married. Mm-hmm. Just to give you a sense.
You really, that's where you were at?
I thought I was waiting till marriage.
Wow.
Yeah. Nobody ever talks about when the girl says, if we're going to date, we're going to have to fuck. And I go,
I think these days they do.
No. But I mean, in terms of like, it's always like, hey, baby, guys' dicks hurt if you don't fuck them.
Yeah.
And she was like, I can't be like, I was like, I want to, but it's not proper.
Right.
I'm a good Catholic boy. I'm the real deal.
Yeah.
And I just made a deal. I committed to a life of sin. It's horrible. But nobody will ever judge the woman for like pressuring a guy. It's like, look at him. He's a big muscle bound piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
She says you gotta fuck, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas the reverse is like, I'm saving myself till marriage. And then he said, fine, I'll go fuck somebody else. And that was disgusting. But I remember it was after my junior year. We'd been dating since, it was like 2 years. I didn't pursue her like that. I hooked up with other people and stuff like that. But it was very, you know, 90s sitcom. Like it was always going to happen someday.
Yeah.
And I remember I'm leaving the gym the summer after my junior year. So I'm 21. I'm fucking jacked. It's like 7. It's an unseasonably cool evening leaving the gym. Mm-hmm. I've got a good gym pump. I think I'm wearing like a Joe Smith jersey from the Warriors. And it's like 73 degrees and sunset. And I've got the girl of my dreams, even though she's in Ohio, like it's like I'm with her. I'm in great shape. The weather is beautiful. And all I could think was, at 21 years old, this is it. This is the end. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, it's never going to be better than this. And most people would be like, man, this is great. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is great shit.
Yeah.
It's gonna like, it's, and to be totally honest, it's never been better than that. And I
know,
like, in other words, it was literally about first love. It was about the weather. It was everything. It was this moment that is like etched in my memory. And it just felt like, I think that maybe is where I really discovered what a pessimist I was, but it was just like, I can't hold on to this, this thought of like, I can't. And with other women, I've had great relationships that I've mostly fucked up. I've had moments in comedy where I'm like, my God, this is amazing. But then it all just kind of, you lose the ability to like get a high from things for me.
In that way, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember my therapist saying to me,
you know, it's just so funny. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No.
I have had that almost exact thought and those exact moments.
Yeah.
Where I had a girlfriend I was 19. That was my first girlfriend in college too. And I was turning 20. And
yeah, that's what most 19-year-olds do.
fuck you. I remember talking to her on the phone because I was like out of town for my birthday. And I was just like, she was like, are you excited and happy? Like, it's cool. You're going to be, you know, you're 20 finally. Like, she was like trying to pump me up or whatever. And I was just like depressed. And I was just like, I'm running out of time.
Right.
You know, I had that feeling even at 20. It's a little bit different, I guess, than thinking like it's never going to be better than this. But even at 20, I was just like, if I don't start moving on doing some of the things that I want to do, like I'm going to miss it.
Yeah.
And that's definitely not true at 20. And I know that now, but I never had that thought that it was like, all right, it's awesome. I'm 20. Like, let's go. Right. You know what I mean? I had the same exact thought.
Yeah. And it's just, if I could, you know, to make a Matrix analogy, if, and I mean, this is no disrespect to all the great people I've met and known and my family, but there's a part of me that's like, if I could have captured the feeling in that moment and like put myself in a permanent coma with that feeling, it'd be tough to say no.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, it's this moment of feeling like you've conquered life.
Yeah.
Despite this being an Alpha Bro podcast, not in that way.
Yeah.
Just in a way, like I won the game. Like the game is won, but I'm only 21.
Yeah.
What do I do now? It's like when Obama left the White House where it's like, I'm 52.
Yeah, right.
What the fuck do I do now?
Hello, Spotify.
Bruce Springsteen, you want to do a podcast?
Hey, Bob.
Let's do 4 episodes. I agree, Bruce. You know, but that's the thing they always say about a younger president. It's like, what do? You've reached. There is no replacing being the most powerful person in the world,
sure.
And you've got. Unlike, at least, hey, say what you will about Joe Biden. Not going to be around 25 more years. Although, wouldn't it be fucking crazy if he's like, I'm 110, Jack.
There's no way.
Oh, man. Wow, Secret Service is going to come for you.
He's lucky to be walking around now, in my opinion, based off of what I've seen.
Yeah. So, but death, that's how I relate to death personally. I It used to scare me in the very hell and brimstone or fire and brimstone way, like the church way, like, oh my God, what happened? Now I'm still scared of death, mm-hmm. I guess. But I'm more curious about it now. And just, you know, I'm past the halfway point of my life. That's a thing that people don't. People go, you don't know that. I know that.
Yeah, right.
Like, I don't want to know that, but it's like, if I get to 90, I don't think it's going to be a good 90.
Mm-hmm.
That's another disturbing thought. And you sort of go, like, when I get bills sometimes, I'm like, when will the fucking cell phone bills stop? When I'm dead.
Yeah, right.
That's when it'll stop. There's certain things you don't get released from right. until you are done. And it's like, well, that's a pretty rough trade-off.
Yeah, it's true.
No more bills. No more money getting taken out of my account.
Right.
That's the good news.
No more money going in either.
Right. But that's how I sort of relate to it on a personal level. But I look at our society. You know, this is where this show always goes.
It's all about society.
And, you know, some people have called me, you know, the greatest cultural commentator of our time. Most of those people are in my dreams when I'm fighting off death. But I look at the way we treat death now, and it's morbidly humorous, but I also think it's partly what's explaining, you know, when people died when I was younger, I didn't feel that my parents were pithy about it. Like, in other words, when someone of stature or somebody they really liked, it was like a morose moment. It wasn't a time for social media sharing or or the occasional joke or my dad, who was a very stoic person, JFK Jr. died on my brother's wedding day. Like that morning is when he died in his plane crash. And my dad was like disturbed. Mm-hmm. Like, and my dad didn't cry like when his own like family members died, but it was like, it was a profound thing. And now, and I'm guilty of this too, you know, mostly in terms of mocking political figures I don't like, but when a death happens, it's like an outpouring and then it's forgotten. And then it's like gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like death lingered more in the past.
I think
good way, in a mourning way, in a sort of substantial, this is a profound loss kind of thing. And it's fewer and fewer people that can generate that level of sort of pause.
Yeah, I remember my mom dying. Jesus Christ. I remember my mom
at the Slickback Studios party
crying at when Princess Diana died.
Right.
I remember that being I didn't understand it. I was like 10, I think. I was just like, what are you crying for? You don't know her.
I was like,
you know, but
I was young, but I said, that hoe that was sleeping around. No, I didn't say that.
But I just remember, to your point, yeah, they do full episodes in like Mad Men when Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and people like that and the weight that it had, JFK. Those are obviously like important leaders in our country, but I guess I never thought about it until right now, but you are kind of right.
Yes. No, and that's, but
I just can't think of anybody that's happened to.
I'll tell you one.
Okay.
The one not necessarily with like me, even though it was a big deal, Kobe Bryant.
Kobe, yeah.
Like Kobe Bryant is one of the last tragic deaths that was like
affecting
people. And I don't mean to disrespect if there are other people that I'm forgetting, but Kobe is still in my head. I think the fact that his daughter also perished with him. I think the fact that he had just retired and he had a full life to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
A second life. He's just
getting started. Is he like 41?
41.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those. But in terms of just even when someone dies of note, like I still have the obituaries of Greg Giraldo and Patrice O'Neill because those meant something to me. Not that I wasn't friends with them. I'd met Patrice a couple of times. I worked with him a couple of times. I had seen Greg Giraldo once at the gym and he rejected me once on Last Comic Standing with comments that I completely agreed with because I went with a more hacky premise thinking that would be a bigger laugh. And he kind of said, it's a good joke, but you know that we've heard like 15 of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's exactly why I almost didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept those obituaries because I was like, those mean something to me. And those are people I want to remember. Not that I wouldn't remember them without it, but it's like, you know, those symbols, those rituals of whether it be a funeral or whatever, they help us give weight to life, mm-hmm. you know? And I think part of respecting life and part of, and I'm not speaking in a religious sense, but it's part of respecting life and honoring life and being thankful for life is also respecting death and respecting those who've passed. You know, one of my favorite movies, it keeps climbing, but one of my favorite movies ever, really, it doesn't have to be just a Pixar movie, is Coco.
Me too.
Coco.
I think Coco is the best Pixar movie for sure.
It's an unbelievable masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
It is. And what it talks.
I cried like a fucking baby in that movie.
At the end of that movie, what's so amazing, I remember sitting next to Laura and she was like overwhelmed with tears because the end of that movie is so like joyous. Affecting.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what's amazing. Yes. It's not, you're not crying because you're sad. You're like, the emotion is pouring out of you by the end of that fucking movie.
I'm getting
movie.
Emotional thinking about it.
It's Coco is, I wrote an entire blog about how I thought America was racist because Coco was one of the lowest grossing Pixar movies up until that point. And I stand by that, mm-hmm. They did the damn thing.
Oh, it's
and
incredible.
I feel like because it was, that was not woke. That was not, you know what I mean?
At all. In any way.
It was a story that was culturally in tune and accurate. Like it was accurate because it wanted to respect the culture, but that fucking movie is a beautiful masterpiece.
Yeah. Yes.
And I started reading obituaries after that, not in a morbid way, but I felt like I got to read these because in the spirit of Coco, I'm giving their life more life.
Yeah.
I'm key. Like if I think, you know, I'll read sometimes obituaries and I'll be glad I did because I go, I didn't know who that person was. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll just be like, huh, what'd they do? Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. Look at this. And I feel like in the spirit of that movie that like, I don't want to sound too crystally and too, I feel like you are respecting what they've done. You're respecting life and their life and you're learning and their, what they put into the world lives on.
Yeah.
Even if it's just me knowing that they invented something or that they helped somebody do something or what made them famous for worthy of a New York Times obituary was they did this one thing that was really amazing one time or whatever. And, but Coco is like one of those movies that sort of, and that was before the pandemic when mm-hmm. we were confronted for the first time because our lives, you know, I was talking about this with somebody the other day. We, you know, you have the World War II generation. And everybody can shit on them all they want, like the greatest generation. Yeah, what they did. I mean,
Yes, dude. It is. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yes,
when you actually like really put it into perspective.
Right, and you can do a flip side and be like, and even if you weren't in the war, there were things going on in civil rights and things that are also mm-hmm. landmark things about moving humanity and this country forward. Mm-hmm. So even if people were kept out of certain things, there were other people on the other track doing incredible. Country changing things. Mm-hmm. The 60s, this incredible decade of upheaval and like tragedy and, you know, but you're part of this incredible moment and time in history. And then I think of our time and we've been sort of blessed for the most part when you think like, nothing bad, like relatively to nothing big until 9/11.
Right.
And that's a tragedy. That's not a good, like there's no.
Well, keep in mind, I'm younger. So for me, 9/11 was earlier in my life.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of been a shitstorm since then.
Right.
You know.
That's what, and that's
9/11, housing crisis, markets crash, pandemic. You got a lot of bad stuff happened in my sort of life span that has affected a lot of Americans. But you had a couple years before that to enjoy in the 90s.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And boy, did I enjoy it. No, I didn't really enjoy the 90s. I did my homework. I lifted weights and I pined for a woman who didn't date me until 2000. 2000? No.
Before the towers came 99, down.
No, 2000. And she studied abroad. Let's go back to her, my past lives moment. She studied abroad in Australia, and she definitely was just like, I had my fill of Australian fellas. Now I'm ready to settle down with my college boyfriend. So that's why I'll never tour Australia.
Yeah, that's why.
Did you know Kelly from Williams, you son of a bitch? Don't tell me no worries. She came back saying that shit. Don't give me no worries. It's called no problem, motherfucker. I no worries, bud. Fuck you, you koala. But yeah, 9/11. I mean, if you look at my adulthood, in a weird way, it's like I got to have a complete childhood. The only terror was my dad with a belt and my mom with a bad day at work.
Right, right.
Those were my twin towers. But I got to have a complete child. You know, I graduated college, went to law school, like day four of law school. We're under attack. Mm-hmm. But then since then, financial crisis, I lose my job. But I don't consider that in terms of death and things. That's not, but 9/11, certainly you start to, that was like a real, oh my God, that, you know, morality has been brought front and center. Mortality has mm-hmm. been brought front and center. And then the pandemic is this, and I always find it really gross. Forget vax talk and things like that. A million people died in this country alone. And you sit around trivializing that and like, not you, but you know what I mean? Like, even if you,
I didn't think you meant me for a second,
you know, even if you're like, you've got your conspiracy theories or whatever, death occurred massive scale.
Yeah.
And for people to trivialize that, I feel like that's what I say. I feel like that was people afraid. Mm. I feel like a lot of the conservatives that talk that shit will never, you know, they think being afraid is gay or feminine. No, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like
I do,
but being afraid is like unacceptable. That's why Trump is so appealing, because it's like he's too dumb and arrogant and a liar to project anything but boisterous confidence.
Yeah, yeah.
And he makes them, he's an emotional support president for them. Mm-hmm. But that's them being afraid. You know, just like anger is like a cover for sadness most of the time.
Yeah.
I think bravado is like a cover for fear.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
You know, and so, you know, and then having, you know, beyond my uncle passing in the earthquake, it was like my dad passing away at 85 and then my uncle passing away at 71, which was like, oh, wow. Because it's like, you know, my immediate family went from 5 to 3. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just that sort of stuff. I wouldn't even say I obsess about it in a morbid way, as weird as that may sound, but I think about it so much more and I wish I didn't. But I go to bed sometimes, like if I eat pizza and have a cookie, I'm like, is that it? Did I just eat the horrible meal that's going to like tip me over?
Clog your arteries. Yeah. And
you know, would I love to be Bill Russell and live to be an upright, lean, you know, 89 or 88? Sure. But he's gone now.
Mm-hmm.
And
good run though.
He was a pro athlete.
Yeah.
I am not.
Right.
I'm actually, being a pro comedian is like, you know, doctors say it's like smoking five cartons of cigarettes an hour for your health.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But what I think about broadly though, death in our society is that I feel like, and Carolla had made this point years ago, and I had sort of a corollary to that where it was like, he would always say, it's never been a better time to do something really wrong. And it's never been a worse time to do something a little wrong. Because they'll get the same attention.
Right.
They'll saturate the media. And it's like, oh, I said an offensive term. I'm not saying racial, but I said an outdated term to a classroom. Well, for 4 days, I'm going to be the worst person on the internet. I murdered my wife. Well, for 4 days, I'll be the worst person on the internet. And then people will move on. I thought that was a great point he made in terms of how we just saturated things. And with death, I feel like, and I'm guilty of this to a certain extent. I try not to disrespect the dead unless I'm disrespecting somebody like Donald Trump. Like if it's a vehicle to show how people will say to me, dude, she just passed away. And I'm like, this is about how Donald Trump is disrespecting his deceased wife, not me. Like the point is I'm using this opportunity to show him as a cruel person in a darkly comedic way, but I'm not saying burn in hell, Ivana.
Yeah.
Like, but I get it. I get a sensitivity there, of course. But I feel like now we just sort of saturate everything with RIP, RIP, RIP. We don't, for the most part, take a pause and sort of appreciate the loss of a life or that meant something. Some people do, obviously, but I feel like a lot of it, RIP, 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 and then we move on, or joke, 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 RIP, joke, 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 and we moved on. And it's like, and that's it. And I feel like, as I always criticize so many things in society, I think this is sort of an offshoot of social media in terms of just an overflow of information. The information spigot never turns off. Mm-hmm. So we're just, we take a quick pause to be like, oh, that's terrible. That said, more information. But oh, what was that? What was that? A very important person died. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's almost like a dance where we're dance partners in terms of devaluing important things. It's not just us, but it's it takes two to tango. It takes two to disrespect life.
Well, I my theory on it is that I think there's such a cynicism right now about, and partially some of it does come from the fact that we have like social media and we just know too much about people. Yeah. Where I kind of feel like now, there's always just a think piece about somebody that's like ready to be dropped.
Right.
No matter who it is. Like you think of somebody like John McCain or whatever, when he died, that was like a really big deal mm-hmm. during the Trump presidency and everything. And like Democrats and Republicans still both went. He was like well-liked in Washington, whether you were on his side or not.
And his daughter stinks, but she's still in my top five GOP chicks.
In terms of just like being like semi-normal.
No, just huge rack.
Oh, okay. But I think that like that's a great example where it's like the guy died. He was a hero in the military hero for the country. And it's just like there's just always the think piece ready to come out. That's just like, well, was he really a hero? He was a military hawk and blah, 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 blah. So it's like if you don't really have, and that's just not, I'm just using him as an example.
Sure.
But you could do that about anybody. It's like John Lennon might have hit his wife once, or I don't know.
Well, have you heard her sing?
But you know what I mean? Like everybody is just very quick to just be like this guy, this person wasn't actually as good as you think.
Yeah.
And after they've been dead, you know, it's
kind of
not
fair.
That's why
I celebrate Vince McMahon when he's alive.
Right.
Despite his horrible behavior, we praise you for the work you've done.
Right. And once we see those books, we know it's going to be way worse.
God. I wanted to do one, but I'm going to hold off. Did you shower today? Because you're going to get filthy right now. But it is, you're right in terms of we have too much information on everybody. I remember I just finished a book review for my Patreon about a book called Mountains Beyond Mountains, which is about this Dr. Paul Farmer, who really was like, I read his obituary. This is a perfect example of, I bought the book. It was a 20-year-old book, but I never heard of it because I read his obituary. And this was a guy who worked in Haiti and was like, I mean, he puts humanity to shame with how dedicated, how he used his gifts, his brilliant mind and medical talents to really make the world a better place mm-hmm. as best he could, as one individual could. And it's an incredible story, an incredible person. And he died at 62. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really, and you think, wow, that's, this guy probably had 15 more years to give of like life-saving knowledge and care. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was, you know, that's one of those obituaries that I just read and was glad I did in that sort of spirit of Coco.
Yeah.
And as goofy as that sounds, everybody, if you do one thing after this episode, if you haven't seen Coco.
It's so good.
Watch Coco. It's a beautiful movie. It has the spirit of a beautiful independent film.
Yeah.
But the pace and joy and speed of a Pixar movie.
It's so good.
Yes. And It'll, you know, there are certain things. It's a weird thing to say, but there are certain movies that'll like, that's a movie that I feel like changed my perspective on things mm-hmm. a little bit, as goofy as that may sound. But I get, you know, now I'm in the second half of my life and I don't know where it's going, but I don't know where it's been. Hanging on to promises of, anyway, White Snake, here I go again. But it's, I feel
younger,
like
younger.
Yeah, that's true. TikTok.
For the audience.
Video, that's TikTok, how you gotta dance. Watch both. You gotta listen and watch. But I just think it's just another example of where I feel like we're in this world where everything is kind of in a coordinated effort to make us worse as people. And I just feel like I'm not saying any individual person has a role to play in like death becoming more trivial, but I think the overflow of information, the speed with which we get it, the sort of lockstep RIP, RIP, oh no, oh no. And then like in 2 days, it's just gone and somebody else has died. And this is the everybody's like, I thought this was going to get funny. This is the funny part, folks. You've waited long enough. The other thing that's going to be weird is when we get older, even older, mm-hmm. not you, me. And I feel like the Lester Freeman of Slickback Studios for all you Wire fans. I feel like I'm the old guy, like doing like in the back while these young podcasters are running around. I'm just like glasses over here, just reading books and going like, look at all these young podcasters. But the in memoriam section of like TV of the Emmys and the Oscars and the Grammys, at some point it's going to be its own show because you're going to have people so much content that we flooded with that. It's like, I can't believe,
I disagree.
I can't believe Barry Smithburn wasn't honored. He was in three seasons of Cum Dumpster on, Whiskey Time Plus. And they didn't even put him in the in memoriam. What about Debbie Schultz? Did you not? She was in 14 seasons. She did the voice of 14 seasons of Cocoa Puffs on Nat Geo Nickelodeon Minus. She was like part of my childhood and they didn't even honor her. Right. What are they doing? Who the fuck is Liam Neeson? I don't even know who that is.
Some old fuck.
Yeah, but Johnny
Johnson. He did
Johnson,
movies?
Johnny what are movies? Johnny Johnson recorded my favorite electronic jazz disco album from 2039. It was the soundtrack of my summer. He died and they didn't even say anything.
I think it's going to go the other way. I think there's just no more in memoriam. We're done remembering people. Because if everybody's got a shot at being famous, like think about.
Like I need to die soon, to be honest. I could get an obituary, I think, in some papers if I die now.
Yeah.
Like if they're like.
Trump impersonator.
Former Bronx prosecutor turned Trump impersonator. They can use the shot of me from Billions. They'll get a couple of quotes from celebrities who followed me. That could get like a little. With a small picture, like a little New York Times. Yeah. My brother is an editor at the New York Times. Can we get a little nepotism
It'd be Jim Gaffigan, Corinne Fisher, and me. giving the quotes.
Corinne Fisher. They just go to you and go, anybody more famous than JL at Slickback Studios that could say something? And she'll be like, I did like his pro-feminism post on Instagram that one time.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think it's just going to get to a point where it's like, if everybody really does have their 15 minutes, which we're kind of living that right now, you're not going to be able to. It's honestly, you can't remember everybody.
Yeah, but it's going to get. But what I'm saying is, I just want to see the show.
I get what you're saying.
Before they cancel.
Yeah.
When they're like, wow, the in memoriam took 98 minutes.
Yeah.
That was too long.
We got to do away with this.
John Legend lost his voice trying to sing, hey, lean on me when you're not strong. How the fuck was I people's sexiest man alive? My favorite mom joke ever was when she wrote to me an email when he was named People's Sexiest Man Alive.
Your mom?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the subject heading was John Legend with I don't know how many question marks. And the text, boring.
That's great.
I thought that was fucking perfect. No funny. Disrespect to him as an artist and a good person, I assume. But
one
like,
of the great disappointments in my life, though. I thought he was going to be like an awesome, cool musician because his second album is really, really good. And he became Chrissy Teigen's husband. And that was it.
I liked his song he did for Obama. What was that one in 08? If You're Out There?
Yeah. Okay. Once Again was the album I'm talking about. It's awesome. It's
that
awesome.
His second album?
Yeah, it's so good. And it's like
that's the one that he probably got like best new artist or whatever at the Grammys for, right?
Yeah, that or his first one, which is pretty good. But once again, is like a...
Which one has that song, Ordinary People?
That's the first one.
Oh, boy. But I hate that song.
You hate Ordinary People? I like Ordinary People. That's when he was still like a musician, though. Now he, I don't know what the fuck.
Oh, look at that. All of a sudden, Mike has finally drawn a line. It's only episode, well, 24 if you go by videos, 25 if you go by audio. We remember you, third party episode. You were a great one. Now you've finally drawn your line on what a sellout is.
Oh, I thought John Legend was a sellout for a long time, many years. There's a point in time where I would have gone to see him and paid to see him, and now forget I wouldn't be paid to see him. I hate him, and it sucks. John Mayer too. Both those guys, man. Like, two guys that I know we completely derailed this, but
two people you wish were dead. So it fits the show theme.
It just bums me out when somebody has this great potential.
It unhouses, and like it. It doesn't bum me out. It person experiencing homelessness you out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's just, they're two guys that I had a lot of hope for in terms of like kind of keeping musicianship alive in popular music. And kind of like pushing things and being experimental and like interesting. And they just both became none of those things, you know?
Yeah. No, but this is kind of let's be honest, the theme of this show, intentional or not, is kind of, you know, we're Slim Pickens in Dr. Strangelove on the nuke as it plummets to Earth.
Yes, we are.
We're having a party acknowledging the fact that we are collectively, like you just went to a thing we weren't even talking about. You named two guys who came into the game as like reputable musicians and artists who were lured or moved or just chose to go in a more popular, conventional,
bland
way.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they have the clout. Like, this is the thing I'll never have the chance to prove it probably, but I feel like I'd be somebody who's like, no, I'm going to keep doing comedy the way I do. If I get successful, I'm just going to keep riding that. I'm not going to, like, I always thought one of the biggest disservices to Dane Cook. That's right. I'm bringing Dane Cook up was he got huge, you know, in a Shane Gillis, a Matt Rife kind of way. Mm-hmm. He was at it longer, I think, but he became really huge. And his management and him struck while the iron was hot. And there was a certain level of impatience about it, which was not needed. Mm-hmm. You're making millions of dollars as a stand-up comic. Why rush the movie career? Why do six bad movies or five bad movies?
Dude.
Because there was this sort of urgency. Like,
do you remember? Employee of the Month?
Employee of the Month, Good Luck Chuck, Mr. Brooks.
Mr. Brooks, bad movies.
But here's the funny thing about that is that his like fifth movie was called My Best Friend's Girl. It's a pretty funny comedy. Mm-hmm. It was Alec Baldwin, Jason Biggs. I think I want to say Kate Hudson, but maybe not.
Yeah.
That movie's pretty good.
Yeah.
That should have been what he should have done is a couple supporting roles. You know, Ike Barinholtz in Blockers, if you will. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen Blockers?
No.
Great comedy. I'm not fucking kidding. Love the movie Blockers. Ike Barinholtz, I say it, Laura hates, as you can imagine. I could just say, Laura hates when I say, and then you just fill in the word after. Anything, too much, the same thing, a joke. But but every time we see Blockers,
yeah.
And Ike Barinholtz comes in and he's in a limo. He's gotten a limo for his like estranged daughter. And he's just like, he's singing Tayo Cruz, but he changes the words instead of dynamite to prom night. Mm-hmm. And it's a hugely funny intro. And I said, that's what Dane Cook should have been doing. Mm-hmm. Like he should have been taking roles like that and building. But I think there was
too big.
There was right. But that's to me, the way I look at it is always, if I ever get to the point where I'm making millions doing stand-up, I have the power. You're not going to tell me when I need to strike. I've been doing this 20 years or 25 years. If I'm ever at that level, it's like, I don't have to strike now. I can, because the worst case scenario is, I'm just a millionaire doing what I want. Mm-hmm. That's the worst case scenario. Best case scenario is I make great artistic choices and build a platform of substance.
Right.
And I think too many people either are talked into or get fearful that I got to do it now. And they put out a bunch of crap. Mm-hmm. Like if he had made My Best Friend's Girl his second movie instead of his fifth, might have changed his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's about the death of Dane Cook's career. See, it's all about death. But yeah, we're gonna break you off a piece of that Kit Kat bar. But I just think we need to, and I'm not Mr. Meditation. I mean, I go to church every week. That's my meditation, is my hour in mass, peacefully praying and thinking about things. But I think we all should I wish I could speak to millions instead of dozens, but I think we should be more mindful of things. And I don't just mean like take a pause and be about yourself and take 10 minutes to close your eyes and breathe and have a cup of tea. No, I mean like take a pause to really contemplate things and like the miracle of life and like, you know, what we're doing to it in sort of all ways. And, you know, like Richard Lewis, just to time this, Richard Lewis, the comedian Richard Lewis died today. And I wasn't like a particular fan of him, but knowing I was probably going to talk about this today, I checked myself, which was like, there are people who are huge fans of his. And you know what? He had a career that you wish you could have had. Mm-hmm. He meant a lot to a lot of people. He inspired a lot of people. Don't make a joke. Like, I just thought to myself, I was like, because it's not, I don't even have a great joke about it. So don't make certainly don't make a mediocre one. Just show your respect that way.
Yeah.
And I feel like I wish we could all do that, but I feel like so many forces in society are forcing us to be sellouts, to be cynical, to be, to not be sad or distract, do something else. Oh, it's too bad. Well, fuck all that. So yeah, that's me talking about death. And you thought this show couldn't get any more uplifting. Well, it will, because we're coming back with the one thing that makes Mike want to end his life, comedy talk.
And now, from the Slickback Studios newsroom in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, here is Scott Pelley with a Rain on Your Parade special report.
And we're back. This is Scott Pelley on assignment 2. Rain on Your Parade podcast with this week's Punchdown of the Week. JL posted a video mocking Tim Scott, senator from South Carolina, where Tim Scott referred to Donald Trump as Boss Mr. Donald. And someone commented, he should have called you Master Donald. JL.
Thank you. Oh, Scott. We love seeing Scott.
Amazing. Didn't comes know you were a Utah Jazz fan either.
Crushes it every time. You love to see him.
And he didn't even need to lose his glasses that time. It's almost like he forgot his gimmick.
Yeah.
Maybe his eyesight.
He's not a sellout. Talk about not a sellout. That's Scott Pelley.
Hits the gym every morning and hits the newsroom every afternoon.
He's a professional.
But the reason that obviously made the list was the subtlety of him calling him Boss and Mr. Donald in a sort of deferential Southern circa 1930s way. That's the joke. Mm-hmm. Master Donald is like, no, it's too much. And Mr. Donald is the funnier joke.
Yeah.
So that to me is a classic punch down where it's like, you think you've got it, but you actually have the opposite of it. Mm-hmm. Like me in my comedy career. Anything but the it factor will be my next album. Now, I want to talk about a special.
Okay.
Teased this last week when we talked about the very fine effort from Taylor Tomlinson.
Yes.
I still think me calling her the Florence Pugh that I might be able to get is both a great joke and probably not true at this point. That's what's really sad. As far as I'm concerned, not her. But I watched, Netflix has really been pumping out the specials. I don't know if you've noticed this about Netflix, but they, speaking of a spigot of content with sort of no fear of diluting art and everything else.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I saw one come up. It was called Ready to Sell Out. And I thought, I'm intrigued. Mike Epps, comedian. Oh, Mike Epps. Comedian Mike Epps. Let me give you some background on me and Mr. Epps.
Okay.
I watched a special of his. I used to review specials. I'd write up them on social media or just talk about them on the previous iteration of this podcast. And I remember Mike Epps' special from, and I don't remember when it was from, whether it was 7 years ago, 5 years ago, but it was, I expected to hate it because I had seen a previous special of his that I thought was an atrocity. Mm-hmm. And there are sometimes you see a special where you go, how are you big? How are you anything? And that special was of that level where I was like, I keep expecting he's this big time guy. He's in a lot of movies. So this had to start somewhere. And this wasn't a matter of like, oh, I prefer a white comics or a certain style. This was so bad. Like, I like comics from every kind of branch of stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. This is horrifically unfunny, like just terribly unfunny. So I watch his next special and kind of teased it on social media to some of my followers, like, oh, new Mike Epps, you know I got to watch that. And it got to the end and I was like, out of a 1 to 5 stars, I was like, this is teetering. This is like a 2-star right now. And if he closes this well, I could do the unimaginable and give him a 3-star out of 5-star review. His closer on that previous special, he's about to do the impossible. This is a U.S. beats the Russians in hockey in 1980 level miracle.
Yeah, yeah.
But it also shows that I am, no matter what I think of a comic's previous work, if I watch it, I will watch it as objectively as possible. His final bit was about different races of people getting to heaven. And what followed was the laziest of hack stereotypes for the next 3 to 4 minutes.
Chinese person.
Because you know the black people are getting to heaven late.
Yeah.
And I condemned that special to hell that very moment.
Yeah.
And I dropped it down to a 1-star because, you know, you had a lead and then you blew it in spectacular fashion. Mm-hmm. So then I said, well, you know what? I review a special almost every week on my great new podcast, Rain on Your Parade. Let me watch this. Terrible. Terrible. Fucking terrible. 42 minutes till I laughed. Now, and once again, I'm trying to convey to people who are either new to watching or listening to me, I laughed at the, now you'd think at 42 minutes, somebody who's hating a special would just be like, well, you're tapped out. You're done. No, he did a bit about like accosting his like woman's work husband. That was funny. Mm-hmm. It took 42 minutes and I laughed because I was still ready to laugh. I was still going to give every joke as best I could an opportunity. But it was like watching someone who was not taking an open mic seriously. Mm-hmm. Just drifting from topic to premise to the end. And he hits himself with the mic, Chappelle style. And it was just like, but it's, you're not, I mean, I don't think a lot of people are laughing, sir. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? And then he got to his closing bit and I was like, why is this called Ready to Sell Out? And then his last bit was almost there to be like, oh shit, I almost forgot the title. And it was like, he talked about, I forget who at this point, but it was like, literally it was like a 1-minute thing wedged in to be like, oh, there it is. Ready to sell out. Oh, phew for a second. And in my mind, I'm like, ready to sell out. You've been in movies and you're putting out an atrocious special.
Yeah.
What does selling out look like? If this isn't selling out, what does Mike Epps selling out look like?
The Mike Epps OnlyFans.
Oh my God. These are the jokes that were too unfunny for my special. You can get that bonus content. But it was an abortion, Michael, an abortion. that's the review. I have never understood. I have genuinely never understood this man's career. Mm-hmm. And, boy, did this special stink. I'm sorry. It was a real stinker. Ready to sell out, ready to unsubscribe to Netflix is what I would call that one. So on that positive note, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. As always, remember, if you want to leave a comment or engage with us, comments on the YouTube episode, they boost it. We had a great viewership on this week's on the last episode.
Always comment, talk that shit, because it helps us.
Good, bad, indifferent, a thought, a recommendation, anything. If you thought of something during the episode, we'll reply. And by we'll, I mean me. Mm-hmm. But we'll, you know, comment there, ask away. And then obviously we appreciate if you're a viewer or a listener, nice review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We got a couple new reviews on iTunes.
Love it.
So thank you for that. And beyond that, you know where I'm performing. You know where you can, listen to this show. And we appreciate you. And, we talked about death, but I think, what I really want is, think of my podcast like The Game with Michael Douglas. We want to drag you through an awful experience so that you appreciate life afterwards. So thank you. And I just did a John Oliver point. I hate that. And now this. See you next Thursday.